Okay, so I started yesterday. Giving reflections on this theme of Satipatthana, and the refrain that the Buddha gives to describe the establishing of mindfulness is. I think it's quite critical to be reflecting and understanding the sort of the comprehensive nature of mindfulness. It's not it's not the mindfulness of a like Ajahn Chah sort of saying, yeah, well. You know, cats have mindfulness when they try to catch mice, but that isn't the kind of mindfulness that we're trying to cultivate, or that kind of focus. It's a mindfulness that has an application of mind that has. These different characteristics that typify this quality, and as I talked about yesterday, the aspect of effort is important. Ajahn Jeff translates it as ardent, and that gives a kind of feeling of the that sense of an ardency, kind of an application, a direction that is important to. It's not just kind of passive and receptive. There's an engaging that is. Essential. So that sense of atapi, being ardent, and alert is the way that Ajahn Jeff translates a sampajhano, atapi sampajhano. And sampajhana is probably more familiarly translated as clear comprehension, and which is a very good translation as well for that word sampajhana, and because even in the say Visuddhimagga, Acharya Buddhaghosa describes sampajhanya as an active application of wisdom, or another name for wisdom, in the sense that there is a discernment that is being exercised in that application of mindfulness in its clear comprehension aspect, and in the commentaries when they parse out the different characteristics of clear comprehension. And I think this is actually very helpful. Sometimes the commentaries can be a bit woolly or repetitive, but in many cases they're also really shine light on aspects of the teachings and And in this case, definitely getting a feel for, well, what does clear comprehension mean? And that, because it points to four different qualities of clear comprehension, and so that the first one being clear comprehension of purpose, so that having that clear comprehension or alertness to the purpose of what one is doing, and is one's actions of body, speech, and mind going to fulfill that purpose? What is one's intention? What is one trying to accomplish? As if it, one is to say, you're trying to make the mind peaceful, and then so if that's the purpose, and then one's it doesn't really recognize it so clearly. That one is applying the mind in a way that is making the mind agitated, so that sense of when you're having that clear comprehension of purpose, and does the action that one's engaged in fulfill that purpose? So this sense of clear comprehension of purpose is helpful, because the means by which one is trying to accomplish something is going to condition the end result, so that it's essential to bring that purpose to mind clearly, and then say, okay, am I actually acting in accord with that? So that sense of clear comprehension of purpose. If one is trying to create happiness and well-being in the mind, and one's getting overwhelmed by aversion or holding some kind of a grudge or something. Those don't work together. They don't function. They're not going to. One isn't going to accomplish one's purpose. So that making that purpose clear. Is a first step in understanding, having that clear comprehension. Also, quite similar. Obviously, these are related. And so, the clear comprehension of suitability, so that similarly with that sense of suitability is a. Is the circumstances that one's in, are they suitable? Are the external conditions supporting one's one's endeavors? The suitability in the Pali, it's sapahaya. Those are the word that is, directly related to the Thai, ubiquitous Thai word sabai. And so, how do you make things sabai? and how do you make them? How do you make them work? How do you make them function? How do you make it comfortable? How do you make it so that one is not creating suffering? So there's this suitability, aspects of suitability to be paying attention to the, you know, it's like sometimes the you know, the ways that we try to accomplish, especially in practice, the well, not just in practice, but it's not limited to that. But their sense of recognizing these causes and conditions that bring about the results, and then the environment and circumstances within which we actually practice, because so we can have a noble purpose and good intentions, but then the actual suitability of the circumstances that we're in, the external environment, the external contact that we're receiving, is it actually does it support? So that's this recognizing there's many facets to the ways of achieving our goal. And of course, if our goal is freedom from suffering or peace and understanding, then there needs to be suitable conditions and circumstances to support that. There, you know, as we develop our meditation practice, just recognizing that we need to see, well, what's suitable for our energy levels? How much rest do I need? How much? What kind of food is suitable? You know, these aren't small things, because we can say right now I'm I've got a cold, I really don't have much energy, and if I work from an idealistic projection of what I should be. As a practitioner, I should be full of energy, practicing diligently, sleeping 4 hours a night, and all of that. It's great ideals, but is it suitable? And what's the result? Just because it's nice to have these ideals, but what's actually suitable? What actually works? For some people, okay, eating little and setting up a regimen of how many mouthfuls of food one's gonna have, and again you work from a place of idealism, which may work for some people, but I'm thinking of somebody like. Say both is Ajahn Kurundamo Tenka Jhana. They just seem to burn food off like crazy, don't. Whereas myself, I sort of I just seem to have to look at richer kind of different kinds of foods, and it sort of puts an extra pound on me, and it's whole different areas of suitability, where that clear comprehension of what's actually suitable for ourselves, our energy levels, our what's suitable in terms of rest, what's suitable in terms of food, what's suitable in terms of the kind of environment that we're in. So these are things that are, and I think this is especially important. This aspect of clear comprehension is especially important for understanding, because all the Buddha can do is give us kind of broad brush templates that we have to figure out what works for us. We have to develop a basis of training and practice that really does produce results for ourselves. There's going to be differences amongst individuals, which doesn't mean that the Buddha's broad brush teachings aren't applicable, but what it means is that it requires a high degree of responsibility and reflection and clear comprehension within ourselves of what actually is for increasing of wholesome dhammas and the decreasing of unwholesome dhammas, which is your basic standard for the progress on the path, so that being able to reflect on, okay, what's clear comprehension of suitability, clear comprehension of domain, usually when we think of domain in the commentaries, they most often speak of domain in terms of the meditation object, so that one is able to maintain one's continuity of sustaining our meditation object. And this is the domain of a practitioner, is that we pick up a meditation object and we learn how to utilize it, sustain it, develop it, work within the boundaries of that meditation object, so that if you're using mindfulness of breathing, then how do you keep applying and stay within that domain of mindfulness of breathing? If you use the asubha gamatana, how do you pick up that meditation object and maintain that as a domain of a sphere of attention, so that you're reflecting from that point, and understanding one's experience from that perspective and that point, because that's where we get insight into. One is that's how we develop a higher degree of stability of concentration, but then we also get to reflect more clearly from a particular perspective, and get insight into the nature of our experience, as opposed to letting things drift and be a bit woolly. Which is Well, it's certainly my tendency. I don't know about anybody else, but I'm sure that most people have that tendency where that I know there is a degree of, you know, because the nature of the mind is that it's a nature of attention. It is drawn to what creates some kind of reaction, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. And we sort of bounce between those points. And we need to have something that helps to be an anchor for our continuity of experience. And so that this sense of clear comprehension of domain, recognizing that we have a we've picked up a particular reflection, meditation object, and then to be able to, which doesn't mean it's obsessively fixated on it, but it's, you're not forgetting it, and you have that as a base for perspective. And I think of, you know, sometimes if one looks at the, especially here in Mendocino County, I mean, you look up at the sky and, I mean, oftentimes it's just, you know, clear blue. But if there's and it's hard to sort of say, okay, where's the weather coming from? How fast? Where's the weather moving in from? This is where you need to pick an object, and then start to see. Well, that came now. Okay, there's the clouds. What direction are they moving? How fast are they moving? What's the nature of them? And in order to do that, you have to actually have a point on the horizon or nearby, either the side of a building or a power pole or a tree, and then you can start to see, okay, what direction are the clouds coming from? How fast are they moving? What's their nature? And it's so that's kind of your using a meditation object as an anchor to start to investigate the different movement of the mind and the different movement of our moods and the different texture of the moods of the mind, in the same way that we can pay attention to the external weather, we can get a reading on our internal weather. But if it's just kind of, you know, looking up at without much of an anchor, and then it's a bit unsure. And it's a clear comprehension of domain, and that gives a good basis of how to attend to experience that we have, and also this. I mean, it is interesting where when the Buddha talks about the four foundations of mindfulness, he actually, there's a few suttas where he actually says, this is the domain of a practitioner, of a meditator, these four foundations of mindfulness. And it's like that. Like there's that great sutta of the quail, and where the quail is as the Buddha says, sort of wandering outside of its domain, and gets picked up by a hawk, and the hawk then sort of whisked away, and its talons, and the and the quail kind of complaining. If only I'd have stayed in my domain, I'd be okay. This hawk wouldn't be any match for me. And then the hawk putting him down, saying, okay, well, oh, we'll see. I can. Don't think you're safe. And then that's, you know, his domain, the quail's domain, being the a newly plowed field. And then the hawk trying to catch him again, and the quail, being in its proper domain, was able to duck under a clod of earth and be safe. And then, you know, the Buddha emphasizing that the quail staying in its proper domain, its home territory, and it was safe. And then, of course, the purpose of it is to emphasize the proper domain, the home territory of a meditator, for a practitioner, being the four foundations of mindfulness. And so this sense of domain is to get a comfortable feeling for the establishing of mindfulness, and clear comprehension. So there's clear comprehension of domain. And the last aspect of clear comprehension is the clear comprehension of non-delusion. And non-delusion in particular is pointing to the non-delusion around the sense of self, and recognizing that these four foundations of mindfulness are a very direct door into the relinquishing of the self-perception, self-obsession, that when we see things from the perspective of these four foundations, then we are grounding ourselves in a basis of experience that helps us to pull back from that assumption of self, the illusion, delusion of self, and that there are just these experiences of the phenomena of body and mind, and and it isn't as if there's nothing there, but there's some metaphysical emptiness that one is supposed to achieve, but that there is a cluster of experience that can go in many different directions, and the habit of creating a sense of self is just that. It's a habit and a conditioning, and there's opportunities for freedom and relinquishment within every experience. And when we can see things in that sense of there is this, there is body, there's feeling, there's mind, there's mental activity, mental objects, all of that is happening, but there's the opportunity to not be entangled in it, and that is opens up tremendous possibilities, so that the sense of clear comprehension clear comprehension of purpose, clear comprehension of suitability, clear comprehension of domain, clear comprehension of non-delusion. This is it's an important basis of our establishing of mindfulness, so that we're able to bring a real clarity and alertness to our experience. So this, I think that, yeah, Ajahn Jeff's translation as alert is it's an apt one. It's also, you know, I think with I think it was Ajahn Munindo was using the word agility or agile in relationship to mindfulness, and that I think this clear, this alert, agile is also an apt description of how we are able to establish the mind, and so because the tendency to try to fix the mind, in the sense of fixate it on an object, can be misleading, and then of course the sense of having no anchor whatsoever is also what our mind does, where it just drifts. So there's this sense of agility, and there's an alertness, there's a sharpness, there's a presence of mind that is required and needed, that is able to tune into, yeah, what's useful, what's beneficial, what's helpful, what is suitable, what aligns with our purpose, what's the appropriate, what's our home territory, how do we establish, like Ajahn Chah, what is our real home, to be able to nurture that foundation. I'll offer that for reflection this morning.